For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Premier League drama. QPR Reading getting out of the Premier League despite unlimited budget and players. Is this Houdini's greatest escape act ever? And six goals at St James's. Liverpool atomic kitten similarity confirmed. Both from Merseyside, both know how to murder the tune. There's Football League news. Jeremy Kyle and bees on their knees at Griffin Park as Donny make their bees' eyes blue. Italy has the unstoppable Javier Zanetti played his last game. Spain, derby action and, of course, the Champions League. Come back to Hoy or the most unnecessary second legs since Long John Silver. All of that plus posts, tweets and more in today's Football Weekly. Right then, in a special audio-only format for your viewing pleasure, welcome to this Football Weekly, Barry Glendening, again.
Again.
How lucky are we, Barry?
Very unlucky.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Philippe Auclair.
Hello.
Little bit of continental flair in today's podcast team. And John Ashton, keeping it real, John.
Yeah, providing the water carrier in midfield.
No, I don't know. It's all about the roots. It's all about the roots. So much for us all to talk about. So many talking points across this crazy game of football. Let's begin with one of the craziest matches of all this weekend. It happened at St James's Park. It was Newcastle's 6-0 defeat by Liverpool. Luke Bainbridge tweeting, "Wouldn't want to be a police horse in Newcastle tonight." Budum tish.
Yeah.
All right then.
Well, someone else tweeted a picture of a horse.
Ah, was that quite a common meme then?
Fits of laughter. And it was, you know, this is the police horse having just been told what happened.
Right,
Newcastle
okay.
at the hands of Liverpool. It was an astonishing hiding that they got. Hats off to Liverpool for sort of putting the whole Luis Suarez thing to bed for the time being anyway and showing they can play without him and manage quite capably without him. I'll leave it possibly to someone else to blow smoke up Liverpool's nether regions, but I just, if I was a Newcastle fan, I'd be very, very worried because they're a slump in form. You know, any team is capable of having a bad day at the office or a shocking day at the office, but they're really, really playing very, very badly and have now shipped 9 goals in the last 2 games.
Well, they finish off this season at West Ham, at Loftus Road against QPR, and then at home to Arsenal. They need 3 points from those games, to be sure, so probably they'll be all right.
I don't know.
No?
I'm not convinced. I can't see them getting a point. Possibly against QPR. They're very lucky they have that QPR game because QPR may have just completely thrown in the towel. Alternatively, now that there's absolutely zero chance of them staying up and the pressure is off, then maybe they will turn on the style.
Right. But I think we can all hazard a guess at that. John, do you think it is that they don't need Suarez after all, or was it that this was a Newcastle team putting in the most spineless performance in Premier League history, as Jonathan Wilson called it? Mind you, that was the day before the Reading QPR match.
Well, I guess it was a bit of both. You can't play as well as Liverpool did without some help from the opposition, and Newcastle did their best to make it as easy as possible for Liverpool. They looked like a team that wanted the season to finish 2 or 3 games ago and just would rather be on the beach. That said, even if they don't get a point from their last 3 games, you're still relying on Wigan to win 2 out of their last 4 to put them in any kind of danger, and I can't see that happening, to be honest.
I've got a quick question about the absence of Suarez. Is it possible that the rest of Liverpool's side just felt a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more comfortable with Adam? Do you remember that game this season away at Chelsea when he scored, went to the corner flag to celebrate, and precisely none of his teammates came to join him? Is it possible that without him, do you know what it is when sometimes when the big dog's out of town, everybody else just relaxes and gets into their game a little
bit more? Like the way the podcast is always better when Max Rushton's in the chair.
That's the analogy I was hoping you'd bring to the table, Barry. Mm. Bingo. What do you think, Philippe?
No, I'm not necessarily convinced about that. I think it's more to do with Liverpool's strange schizophrenia. I mean, this season where they've got, I think, the third best attack in the league with something 67 or 68 goals. So
second now, actually.
Second now, okay. So obviously very fluent in that side of the business. But if you look at how they've accrued so many goals, generally they've had these moments where they were winning 4-0, 5-0, 4-0. 6-0 against Newcastle, so it can be a bit misleading, perhaps. But it's true that certainly Coutinho is bringing an awful lot.
Coutinho, let's love Coutinho.
Yeah, well, who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Yes,
he's so cute, isn't he?
Well, could you explain to me why he found it so difficult in Italy?
I don't know. I was asking Gabriele Marcotti,
the same question yesterday. We did suggest that there's something about the crazy nature of Inter and the fact that it wasn't a particularly coherent team there.
Mm-hmm.
But he never looked. And he went out on loan to Espanyol and he was injured for a bit. When he first arrived, there was this feeling he was going to be a great player. But he even when he was fit, he never looked like he had the personality. He never looked like he was the kind of that he was big enough physically or mentally to actually determine games. And I believe that was the case when he was at Espanyol as well. So what's happening at Anfield, I think, has been a real shock to everybody, not least Inter, who are in seven shades of hell currently without him.
One of the things, though, I mean, is that if you look at that Liverpool performance, I mean, one thing which was truly, I think, exceptional about it was the speed of passing, you know, really literally not even taking one touch, like bang, 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 bang. And I think
they probably needed one touch, no?
Well, one touch, I mean, to control the ball.
Right, okay.
It was really flowing very, very quickly indeed. And many teams would have suffered against a Liverpool side which played as fluently as that. On the other hand, I think that in terms of tactical disorganisation, Newcastle's performance ranks up there with, I don't know which other ones, in this season. It was absolutely appalling. Nobody were keeping that. If you look at the goals, well constructed as they were, you could see that everybody was looking at everybody thinking, where am I supposed to be? And not coming with an answer for that. Yeah. And the attitude of some of the players absolutely stank. Because if Barton talked about maggots. For QPR, well, there were a few full-blown flies on that pitch, St. James Park pitch.
Well, Alan, how are you? His team selection is just weird. I don't understand it at all.
What did he do?
Well, he set up the team not to concede rather than
that went
to
well.
Score. And they conceded after 3 minutes. And then he had no apparent plan B. He's been playing Moussa Sissoko on the right wing. Moussa Sissoko is not a winger. He's a box-to-box midfielder. They could really do with a good box-to-box midfielder because Cheick Tiote is woefully out of form after a great season last season. He's playing Johan Caballé off the shoulder of Papi Cissé when that's not his position either. And that recent acquisition, Mapu Yanga Mbia at right back, is an absolute car crash.
Right. Well, maybe Alan Pardew will soon be out of position himself. Who knows? Certainly a lot of unhappiness at St. James's Wood.
The fans seem to be torn between those who emphatically want him out and those who are prepared to give him a chance.
Right. Right. What about Coutinho, though? A little bit more love for him? Which was your favourite pass, John?
The assist for the third goal.
Yeah, where he just chips it.
The little sort of sand wedge in between two defenders. That was great.
Yes. And Sturridge.
Is that 7
apart from the
7
celebration,
11,
adds
like
producer Ben, which is fair enough. What?
7 and 11, is that right?
It's not bad, is it? And, you know, he set up another as well.
Well, the thing is that the pass for Jordan Henderson, I don't think that the Sturridge of a season ago would have done that one. Probably have gone alone.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, well, excellent stuff for Liverpool.
Sorry, one thing about Liverpool, like that was a magnificent performance from which their supporters can take great heart, but the fact of the matter remains that despite becoming the second highest scorers in the Premier League, they've still only won 3 out of, 17 or 18 matches against teams in the top half?
Ooh.
Which is a worrying stat.
You're right, it is.
Quite a few draws, though, in there, and which were, remember, there was a 2-2 against Arsenal, a 2-2 against City as well.
Not wins, though.
No, but they performed honourably.
All right. Wow. Reading QPR. Who watched this game?
I did.
Oh, okay. Was it the worst game ever of all time?
I don't think it was the worst game ever of all time.
Which game was worse?
I can't think of one off the top of my head. Hold on. Go back to...
Well, I've got a game that might have been worse. But
Romania-France in Euro 2008.
The World Cup 2006, there was a Switzerland against... who was it? Serbia? Ukraine, actually.
I don't think you can possibly have games in major tournaments unless they're dead rubbers.
Right.
Can't be terrible games because there's always something riding on it. Whereas this, there wasn't anything riding on it, so...
Well, there kind of was, no?
No, there wasn't, was there, really?
Well, there kind of was.
Well, no, but there wasn't. We could do this
only because they chose not to have anything riding on
it. If either team had won, they would not be relegated.
Exactly. That's something riding on it.
Well, that's quite a big stake. And
I still have nightmares about a 1-0 victory of Chelsea over QPR in the Cup.
Really?
Last season, which was absolutely unbearable.
All right.
But this was close.
Very depressing, though. The utter disinterest both teams seem to exhibit in actually going out and exiting the league with dignity.
I think QPR's season ended officially when they conceded that late equaliser against Wigan
right.
A few weeks ago. That was the time when the players stood around with their relegation faces on, hands on knees, or
smiling?
Slumped on the turf.
All right.
Yesterday there were smiles from Harry Redknapp.
I was disgusted by that.
Were you?
No, I wasn't.
A lot of people were. I thought it was a bit off, but, you know, I mean, the damage was done weeks ago.
I'd be chuckling if I was Harry Redknapp. Gilbert Bannerman asks, is QPR the team with the best players pound for pound to go down in the Premier League?
I don't think there's although there's kind of they've spent a lot of money on the squad and there's a lot of very well paid players there, mm-hmm. there's not a massive amount of talent there, I don't think. Well, if you look at players like Chris Samba, who's not the player he was 2 years ago, Højlert doesn't look the player he was when he was at Blackburn.
No, but
like,
when he came, Højlert, a lot of people thought it was a great signing.
Højlert has played very little football this season. I mean, he seems to have been relegated to the bench on a number of occasions.
Start of the year, then.
And actually, they've got the goalkeeper of Brazil on the bench, which is extraordinary. What is funny, or not funny at all, is that you've got two teams, you know, joining Newcastle and QPR, who spent a lot of money recruiting people from Ligue 1, notably, during the winter, and who've done extremely badly out of it.
That's interesting.
Do you remember those days when there was a French day at Newcastle?
Yeah.
Because I think it's a new record, the fact that there are seven Frenchmen who played for Newcastle this weekend. It has never happened.
And they got slaughtered 6-0 in a performance that many are describing as spineless.
Right.
I'm not drawing any conclusions from that at all.
Some people did.
Okay, well, let's come on to an Englishman, Harry.
Yeah. He's been at pains to blame anybody else, hasn't he, apart from himself. Mm. And to be, the fans seem to be quite anti, you know, to be putting a large part of the blame on Mark Hughes as well, who has to obviously share some of the blame, but... You know, if you're going to point fingers, one of your fingers, you've only got five, has got to go at Harry, hasn't it?
Only one for Harry.
Well, there's enough people to blame. I mean, you can't blame all the players with the fingers of one hand, can you?
Right. All right.
He still has established a new record of the least percentage, with the lowest percentage of wins of any QPR manager in the Premier League.
Harry Redknapp?
Yep. Well, 4 out of 22, 18%.
Wow.
And... I suspect, I'm only speculating here, but if he had managed to keep them up, I suspect he would be not as quick to absolve himself of the responsibility for that. But I kind of feel sorry for Tony Fernandez, the owner of QPR. He's sort of made his own bed and has to lie in it now. But a friend of mine described him recently as like being a hunk of fresh meat being lowered into a tank of piranhas around January.
Is he not a man who buys a tank, puts some piranhas in it, and then dives in?
Possibly. And calls the piranhas Harry and assorted people associated with Harry.
Yeah. What about the future, then? I read with interest that QPR have 25 senior players who are under contract until 2014, i.e. not at the end of this season. Very few of them have relegation clauses. Amongst those 25, presumably, is Joey Barton. Now, is he going to come back at this point? Olympique Marseille, do they have to pay money to keep him? What's the story?
Yes, my guess would be. I mean, I'm not a fan with...
That's fantastic.
Can you imagine Joey Barton going back to QPR?
I want to.
Okay. All right. I don't think it's going to happen, though.
Would you
say very few players have got escape clauses?
Apparently so, yeah.
Well, Loïc Rémy certainly has one.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one, and that's one, probably the first one to go, I would imagine. Probably the one who is worth the most money at the club.
But other ones, they weren't able, as I understand it, they weren't able to bring in with relegation clauses for them to slash their wages if they go down, because people like Samba weren't interested in signing a deal like that.
Yeah.
Samba, who didn't even play this weekend, was that...
I'm not aware of the reasons behind it.
Right.
But it will be interesting to see what happens in the summer at QPR, because when Redknapp had his sort of last major success in the Championship with Portsmouth, when he came in, he had loads and loads of players out of contract, so he was able to really revamp the squad, change it all around, bring people like Arjan Dazou in, who made a big difference. He's a very Harry kind of character. But if he's stuck with... if he's allowed to build his own squad, I reckon they'll challenge next year. I think he's got enough about him to create a squad that'll figure in the top half of the Championship. But if his hands are tied by the sheer amount of wages they've got to fork out, then they might struggle.
I personally think there'll be a Harry Redknapp-shaped hole in the door of QPR by the end of the summer. I don't think he'll be in charge next season.
Interesting. Well, if you feel like Harry would leave a big hole in your life, then you can get a fat volume of him, courtesy of the Guardian's very own John Crace, who's written what he's terming a psychobiography of the QPR manager, called Harry's Games. Nice title. And if you're interested in this, how the self-proclaimed non-wheeler-dealer found himself suddenly sacked by Spurs, then presided over the shambles at Loftus Road, etc., then you can actually... well, there's a link to it at the top of the Football Weekly page. Looks a terrific read, that, and there's pictures and stuff.
Terrific. John Crace, will he do a digested read of his own book, I wonder?
Because that's a great little feature.
Oh, it's brilliant, yeah.
I particularly like the digested read's digested read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably any listeners who aren't familiar with John Crace is a Tottenham fan, and he's also a football programme obsessive, I think
is he?
He collects programmes, or memorabilia of some sort. I think it's programmes, yeah.
Right,
good
okay.
Bloke, nice fellow.
All right, we're looking forward to reading that myself. In other bottom-of-the-table related news, Wigan, the 2-2 draw with Spurs. Just a quick question here, a lot of people praising that fellow Roberto Martinez for the way he's been relaxed and low pressure with his players. Has he been a little bit too low pressure with his players, given the way that they kicked the ball around happily as if they were on the beach somewhere and allowed Gareth Bale to wander in and stick it in the back of the net at the start of that match?
Well, I've asked before on the pod, is Roberto Martinez as good as he's cracked up to be? And I'm not having a go at him. I just genuinely don't know. And I'm still unconvinced. And there's no doubt he's a really lovely fella. He's a very smart man. He's a very erudite pundit when he does the gig on Sky or anywhere else. But I'm still not convinced by him as a manager. And I mean, Wigan lost 2 points in that game that they shouldn't have. They were kind of unlucky that the equalising goal was could have gone anywhere. And but when you're down that end of the table, those things just don't go your way, do they?
Well, especially if you make back passes like that, John.
Well, yeah, but I think I think it's fair enough to praise someone for sticking to their football philosophy.
No, absolutely. I'm just wondering whether he might want to introduce a level of tension among his players to prevent them making mistakes like that.
Don't you think that what he's doing is that the level of tension? Are you at the training sessions? I don't know.
No, but
what he does, what he's very good at, is that presenting an image, a front for the club and his players when he's doing press conferences, talking to the cameras.
He gets a lot of praise for that. I'm just saying, when you saw the pair of back passes that happened at the start of what was an absolutely crucial match, did you not think, hello, are you aware of what this game represents and how important it is for you not to concede?
This is the way they got themselves out of trouble and brilliantly actually last season.
Right.
And there are so many managers in England and elsewhere actually when... the danger is there, relegation danger is there. We'll go, let's dig some trenches and defend like mad, and it's time for us to show that we're men.
Right.
And no, what he
does. See, that's
is
the kind of thing we'd like to see.
I was just
asking the question. You're probably right, Flew. I'm just asking the question.
I think listeners should realise that Jimbo's got too used to producer Ben's style of iron fist leadership.
Yeah.
And if we don't perform in the pod, then the hair dries out. It's very much a stick rather than a carrot approach.
Although the hair dries out for limited use on the servers, John. How about that Manaman goal?
Yeah, it was a fantastic strike, wasn't it? Absolutely fantastic. And are we allowed to say that he's a... Is he back in our hearts now after
is he that kind
bad,
of player,
bad tackle? Well, he clearly is the sort of player who can score that sort of goal, isn't he?
Right.
But is he? Are we allowed to like?
Hey, everyone can make a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're still in the bottom three, Wigan. They are 2 points behind Aston Villa, who play tonight against Sunderland. Big, big game. Right. That's it for part one. It was a big one. Part two's coming up. It might be even bigger. Quick little appendix on part one, and it's a knowledge-starved question for John Ashton. Rob Green has now been relegated with 3 separate clubs. Does that make him in some way a record holder?
It might do for goalkeepers, I suppose. I can't think of another goalkeeper who would have gone down 3 times.
Mm.
I mean, in terms of actual relegations, there's plenty. Neil Redfern, for example, Nigel Quarchy have both had 5, possibly even 6.
Really? That's a lot, isn't
As far
it?
As I know, the record holder is a player whose name completely escapes me.
Right.
But I think he's a Nigerian player in Germany who was relegated for seven successive seasons with seven different clubs. It's quite an impressive.
So when
effort.
He turned up at training the following season...
Yeah, if he walks through the door in the summer, it's like, oh, no.
My word.
On a sort of related note, are the Hunt brothers, Noel and Stephen, the most relegated siblings in English football history? Because I think they're both gone down this season. Well, Wolves are all but down from the Championship. Noel's gone down with Reading, I think. They've both been relegated with Reading before.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen's definitely been relegated twice with Wolves, I think. So, I'm be curious to know how relegated they are.
Well, look, at that might be in Thursday's knowledge. Possibly.
Could be.
All right.
Last time I said I'd put something in the knowledge in a pod on a Monday, I didn't. I forgot to do it. So.
Well, who cares? Yeah. All right. Jolly good. On to Europe then. Next up, it's the very great Sid Lowe in Madrid.
Hello, James. Hey. How are you doing?
Hey, very well. A weekend of extraordinary events across Europe and even in Spain as well. Goodbye to the San Mamés. The Athletic Bilbao Barcelona game saluting at that venerable stadium, and a messy wonder goal to see it off in style, Sid.
Well, not quite. Yeah, right. I mean, it was a messy wonder goal to see off in style, but of course the final goal of that game wasn't scored by Messi. The final goal of that game was scored by Ander Herrera in the 91st minute. So Athletic, I think, really enjoyed the fact that it finished 2-2 against Barcelona because they got battered by Real Madrid in the last Real Madrid game there. It's not the last game ever there, but it's the last of the big two.
Oh, all right then.
Well, the last of the ever one, obviously, is at the end of the season. There's still 4 weeks to go. I think it's Levante.
All right. Top research from AC Jimbo. Not a game of two halves, a game of no Messi and Messi, Ass described it as.
Yeah, that basically makes sense. Barcelona were not particularly good. Messi came on and they created five or six chances in 7 or 8 minutes after he came on. You could say sort of created one in that he headed it to Alexis Sanchez. I'm not sure if he was trying to pass it to him or not, to be honest with you. And then he scored a really brilliant goal himself as well.
Described a brilliant goal, Sid.
Very tight space on the edge of the area, steps away, steps left to right, then right to left again, sort of wriggles through a gap and then finishes in very much a messy finish in the way that the Spanish always describe it, as a pass into the net.
Lovely stuff. Meanwhile, in Madrid, it was the Madrid derby. Atletico taking the lead against a Ronaldo-less Real.
Control C, control V, Jimbo.
Yep, absolutely.
Copy-paste. I mean, honestly... I've lived in Spain for over a decade. I've never seen Atletico win a derby. It goes back to 1999. As you can imagine, I've been storing up the "partied like it was 1999" headlines for about a decade now. It just won't happen.
By the time it does, Atletico, no one will know what you're talking about, Sid.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And Atletico Madrid were I thought pretty bloody awful, to be honest with you. Real Madrid were no better. It was a desperately bad game. It was one of those that had you reaching for the bleach and a scouring brush.
Right.
It was just awful. And Atletico Madrid may well feel to themselves, well, if we didn't win this time, we never will. Because, as you say, Real Madrid played basically with a team full of subs. Although it's worth putting the subs into context. For example, the three subs that Real Madrid sent on against Borussia Dortmund, €130 million worth of players. The Real Madrid side at the weekend obviously valued about three or four times as much as the Atletico Madrid side. So it is worth putting that into context. But it was very poor. Atletico got the opening goal, you said, really early on. I think it was something like 4 minutes when Falcao scored. And there was a moment we thought, wow, this could happen. But, of course, we should know better. Because there's always a moment when you think, wow, it could happen. And it never does.
All right. I noticed in other news that Valencia, who are in a bit of a dicky financial predicament as it stands, are set to miss out on Champions League money next time.
Yeah, I mean, I'd almost prefer to turn that on its head rather than Valencia missing out. They got beaten by Real Sociedad, who have been brilliant this year. Best team in Spain to watch, I think, this season consistently over the last 25 games or so. They won 4-2 against Valencia. But as you say, it's a problem for Valencia, who we all know have big financial problems anyway, who are already in a position where they're forced to sell their best players just to meet the interest repayments on the various loans they've got. And if they lose out on that basic... introductory payment of around about €20 million for being in the Champions League group stages, and of course more if you progress, then it may well be that they have to sell even more players this summer than they would normally want to do. And of course the problem for them isn't just that they have to sell players, but everybody knows that this is their situation, so therefore it becomes harder for them to sell players at the kind of prices that they want to.
Right.
Now, their long-term future is only going to be secured by selling their current ground, and that just doesn't look like happening at the moment.
Sid, you've got to get into a press conference. Whose press conference is it?
Jose Mourinho and Sergio Ramos.
Hoo-hoo-hoo. So let's talk about it then. The comebacks. Now, Barcelona-Bayern, does anyone think they're coming back?
No, right, and okay. It's interesting. I think mentally, no one in Barcelona really is building up to it either, which is quite the opposite to Madrid, where they really are building
up
to it.
Well, let's talk about Real Madrid then. A lot of people dusting off the Juanito quote about 90 minutes is a long time at the Bernabeu. Even longer, some people would say, at the Medeski Stadium this weekend. But what are the chances then of this extraordinary comeback actually coming to pass?
Well, when Klopp said the other day, if Real Madrid win 3-0, we're out, it just sounded so plausible that you thought, wow, it really can happen. Now, looking at this coldly and rationally, Dortmund have beaten Real Madrid twice and drawn to them once in the three times they've played each other in the Champions League this year. They have been, I think, clearly the better side in all of those three games. And of course, they were fantastic the other night. And that's one of the things that seems to have been forgotten in all this kind of excited swirl, is that Dortmund are a good side, and they may well score. Of course, it's possible. It's not very likely, but of course, it's possible.
Well, see, even less possible, of course, because Spain's answer to Tomov Rebo, to Anders Frisk, is going to be refereeing the game.
Yeah, Howard Webb. And they do love to moan about Howard Webb, which I find comic, really. And of course, it all goes back to the World Cup final and Xabi Alonso having a set of stud marks in his chest. But that does kind of overlook the fact that Spain did win that World Cup final. And in terms of decisions that really changed the game, I think Ian Robin might believe that actually the favouritism went the other way.
Interesting. Now, if Mourinho does get knocked out here, of course, you mentioned the fact that Real Madrid are going to be playing Atletico Madrid in the Copa del Rey final, but he is possibly on for a season without a trophy.
Well, he is, except as you just said, they're playing Atletico Madrid in the Copa del Rey final.
All right. Is he off? Is Ancelotti coming?
Well, a couple of radio stations this weekend in Spain reported that Ancelotti has been speaking to Florentino Perez. Perez has wanted him for a long time as manager of Real Madrid. I think he's a very good Real Madrid-style manager. Sensible, knows how to deal with big-name players. He's capable of dealing with owners that impose a little bit, and he takes that reasonably well and handles that well. So I think there is a certain degree of logic to that. And I guess we're now just waiting for Mourinho to finally confirm that he's going.
All right then, Sid. Listen, you who knows? He might be about to do it in the press conference just ahead of this crucial event.
What I think he might do is he might say something if they get knocked out post-game, but I don't think he'll say it before the game.
Hey, Philippe. Yes. Paris Saint-Germain, they're going to let Ancelotti go?
Yes, I mean, the two...
Are they going to get Wenger instead?
Oh, God. Right.
Call him what you will.
Start with. First thing, most likely departure from Paris Saint-Germain is Leonardo.
Who?
Okay. Perhaps to go back to your country of preference. Preferred country? Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. And that's the first. Second thing, in France, people keep saying that Ancelotti and Real Madrid is a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing, there was a lot of talk about Arsene Wenger joining the club. I mean, there's loads of talk, you have to understand, from Paris Saint-Germain, which is emanating from people who have absolutely got no say in the way that Paris Saint-Germain is being run.
Ah.
Like, for example, Michel Moulin, the guy who used to be in charge of things, well, he's no longer there. He's got nothing to do with QSI, so therefore his information is valueless. We came to Arsene Wenger. Actually, I had a chance to ask him the question at the press conference yesterday.
Can you do the voice?
He answered in French, so I couldn't do it.
Oh.
No. And he was quite clear that he intended, you know, he'd always respected his contracts, and at his age he was not about to change, and
right.
that he was not aware about what was said about him in Paris Saint-Germain in the French press, which I take with a pinch of salt. He must be aware of the fact that there was
articles
everywhere.
Non.
Excuse me?
It sounds like a non.
It sounds like an interesting question to ask, and I wouldn't, you know, right now people say it's completely crazy.
Right.
And there are things that make me feel it's a little bit more ambiguous. I've got to be very careful, because I think the likelihood of it happening is very, very low indeed.
Right.
And when I say low, it could be Joachim Low. You've heard this you've heard this rumor going around that Arsenal were studying the possibility of having Yogi coming as a possible manager.
I hadn't heard that rumor.
You hadn't heard,
you heard that rumor, Barry? Yeah. And you do the rumor mill.
Sometimes.
Yeah,
there was quite a big story last week about it, and in Germany they're certainly talking about it, and people are saying, well, it makes no sense. Joachim Löw is in charge of one of the most successful German teams in history, apart from the fact it has won nothing. Mm-hmm. And there's the World Cup in 2014.
Yep.
Would make no sense to replace him, but there are people in Germany who say, well, actually, it would make a lot of sense to replace him with somebody called Jupp Heynckes, who is having a fantastic season with Bayern.
Right.
Knows almost, well, has all the... half of them, of these players, under his orders already in Munich.
Yeah.
So therefore, the fact that Jogi Löw would leave the Mannschaft to go to a club where he would earn about three times more money makes sense, and Heynckes, perfect fit as well. So German side sorted.
The whole things would knit well together.
Exactly.
To use a Jogi Löw related
And of course, it means that probably all of this is utter nonsense.
Well,
because it just makes sense, you know. So
it sounds
Mourinho
great,
goes, Ancelotti goes, yeah. Then Leonardo goes, and you can have Wenger coming as a sports director, and maybe Rafa Benitez leaving Chelsea to go to
PSG. It's like knitting. It's when you pull one thread, the whole thing. It's amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it go on further?
It goes on further. So I might actually revise my estimate to 10 to 15%, probably 2 to 5%.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. In the meantime, Ancelotti's all but sewn up the Ligue 1 title.
Yeah, one more. I mean, they could be crowned champions next round of games.
1-0 over Evian, but let's talk about...
something, this.
Yeah, let's talk about the brawl at the end. I didn't realise that PSG did brawls.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah?
Yeah, they do. I mean, when you think... I mean, it looked to me a bit like an NHL sort of brawl. It was...
proper.
It was a proper one. Mm. And it has to be said that the referee who was in charge of this game has got a bit of a reputation when it comes to unleashing red cards. And it was already the referee at a previous brawl that Evian were involved in.
And David Beckham at the heart of it, as ever.
Well, yes. After a fashion... because he came on the pitch, I believe, in the 84th minute.
Right.
And it's absolutely brilliant to see his dashboard, because it's balls received, none. Balls passed, none. Shots, of course, none. Passes, none. One tackle, one red card.
Right.
So that was a... And the red card
it's
was
usually
ridiculous.
What he does in about 90 minutes, I think.
The red card was ridiculous, because he obviously, I don't think there's any intent to harm or anything on the Evian player, but he's just too slow and incredibly clumsy, and he goes over the ball and sort of falls away, and at the same time catches the leg of the guy, and it's immediately red card, and he goes, oh my God, it's not possible. So off he goes.
Hmm.
So that's three sending offs for Paris Saint-Germain in that game, because Verratti had been sent off as well for two cautions, and Sirigu, the keeper, was also sent off for his part in the brawl after the game. So we'll know when the suspension, the bans are, when the disciplinary commission next gets together.
Right.
Quite astonishing stuff, but, you know, they won, and they're very close now to the title.
One win away from the title. Barry's opened up the paper, such was his... disenchantment with that French section of our pod. Barry, you'd probably like to move on to Serie A now, would you? Big weekend in
Italy. Another thing.
Oh, there's another thing.
You have to mention Saint-Etienne.
Oh, okay, then.
Well, because Saint-Etienne are having an extraordinary season, really. You know, nobody was expecting them to be in that position.
Mm-hmm.
They've already won the Coupe de la Ligue, first trophy since 1981.
Right.
They're unbeaten in the calendar year in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth place. They drew... one all away from home at Lyon, were also in third position at the moment. So it's like a rebirth, a renaissance of the great Vert.
Oh, great.
And in France, it's a motive for great satisfaction.
Well, all right. And of course, Monaco could be coming up, except...
they've got a problem.
Except the tax problem.
Yep. They've got to relocate the club in France.
Right.
So are they going to relocate Monaco in France.
Are they going to do that?
At the moment, there are attempts at mediation.
Right.
Just to put that in perspective, the fact that they're able to function the way they are is an absolute scandal.
Right, just to explain.
Could you imagine that? No, I explained very clearly with one simile.
Okay.
It's as if a team that had been in the Premier League and was now in the Championship, which is the case of Monaco, was operating from Jersey or the Isle of Man with all the tax advantages of that club. That's exactly that.
Mm.
So it's an absolute scandal. And it's finally coming home to roost because of the new tax laws. And Monaco are saying that it's a great prejudice against our club. Well, the prejudice is against all the other clubs in French football, clearly.
Why? And so you think there's going to be a bit of mediation? Maybe they'll fudge something out?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a very interesting one because everybody seems at the moment to be really entrenched in their positions. But it's a club anyway that, in terms of financial fair play, is a complete madhouse as well.
Absolutely.
Great stuff.
Will Rafa be in charge of said madhouse next season? Rafa Benitez?
No, there's been talk. There's a lot of talk of Ranieri leaving the club. And of another Italian, initials RM, taking over. That's the rumour in France.
Nice. Riccardo
Montoliva.
Rogerio. All right. Be coy about that then. Go on. Now, Italy. How about Italy, Barry?
Javier Zanetti.
Yeah. Well, we'll come to him. Well, all right. We'll start with him, shall we? Javier Zanetti.
Yeah.
He says he'll be back. Shocking scenes down at the Favorita on Sunday as he went off during Inter's game at Palermo. Palermo were in the bottom three. They beat Inter 1-0. Inter are now down in seventh place. They stand a very real chance of not being involved in any European competition at all in next season. Palermo, meanwhile, managed to move out of the bottom three with this surprise win. But the biggest news, of course, was the torn Achilles tendon for Javier Zanetti. So,
and this just a couple of days after he'd met the Pope.
Well, yes, he'd given the Pope an armband. He was wearing a copy of that armband. A lot of people reading things into that. I'm not quite sure what, but 18 years and 847 games. He's never had a major injury like this. He's never had to do rehab and stuff. They're talking, obviously there's scans and stuff to be completed, but they're talking about possibly 8-9 months out of the game. He's 39 years old. A lot of us yesterday going, oh my goodness.
Well, he turned 40 in August. I mean, it's going to take at least 6 months to recover from
but
a ruptured Achilles.
But he says that's not how he's going to go out. He says he is coming back.
And well, I would be inclined to believe him.
All right, then.
One of I did enjoy the fact that as he was being stretchered into the ambulance on the way out of the ground, that he stopped to talk to journalists were there asking for a quote and sort of said, I'm on my way to hospital. I'm in extreme pain.
Sensors indicate.
Yeah, you can't imagine that happening in the Premier League. So hats off to Javier.
Well, once again, hats off to the man we thought was indestructible. And let's hope he proves to be and bounces back stronger than ever. In other Serie A news, there was all sorts of drama. Because I mentioned Inter being well out of the European picture. Sampdoria hosted Fiorentina. Now, Fiorentina were just behind Milan in the race for the top three spots, Champions League positions, yeah? Fiorentina had a 3-0 win away to Sampdoria with Ljajic, who we mentioned playing against the manager who biffed him up on the sidelines last year.
He did, and he
set up another year, the game of the season. I'm not quite sure why. But all of this meant that by the time that it came to Sunday evening, Milan were 2 points outside the top three and facing, you know, because we're running out of games here, facing not being in European elite next season. Anyway, now the good news for Milan is they were taking on a Catania side who hadn't beaten them in 50 years and were missing four defensive starters, including their keeper and arguably their best player, Andujar. So, of course, Milan are absolutely battering them from the word go. 30 minutes, they've just been camped in their box, chance after chance. I think they'd had 19 shots at this point, and the goal finally comes, but oh my word, it's up the other end. Catania bomb down the other end and snatch a shock lead. Milan absolutely stunned, but they continue to batter, and just before half time they get the equaliser. So the second half begins. Milan once again on the front foot, slamming in chance after chance. The replacement keeper, who's making his first ever Serie A game, is having the match of his. Well, he's only had one game, but it was very much his best Serie A game ever. And at last the goal comes. But oh my goodness, it's down the other end again. Catania now lead 2-1 at the San Siro, where they've never ever one, and Milan at this point look absolutely shagged out. They've thrown everything they can at Catania, and it's come to nothing. But at this point, Allegri, on what was a very delicate day for him, the day began with the Gazzetta dello Sport on its front page saying that Allegri's out, and they're going to bring in Clarence Seedorf as the manager next season, which, whether it's true or not, it's just yet again Milan leaking information about Allegri not being the one they want, and at a time when he's got a very delicate match in prospect. But anyway, so Allegri at this point thinks that I've got one last card to play. It's a card called Pazzini. He throws on Pazzini. So he's basically playing with three or four up front, and Pazzini gets a brace, and then 3-2 up, and then Balotelli gets a penalty, and he slots at home, and they win 4-2. Milan had 38 shots in the game, which, according to Opta Paolo, is more than any other side in a single game in the top five European leagues this term. Remarkable, no? Anyway, and one nice thing was the Milan fans at the San Siro singing Salta con noi, Javier Zanetti, I jump with us, which might sound rude given that he's just, you know, done his tendons and that. But no, it's actually to say, you know, we support you. You know, you're one. So it was a message
sure
of solidarity.
I don't think that's true. I think they were taking the mickey.
Really?
Yeah.
I read that much as a...
Well, according to our Paolo, as opposed to Optus. Right. Unless I misread, but check Paolo's column.
No, I'm just so naive that when I read that, not in Paolo's, but, you know, I went, oh, that's nice.
Right, I think you might be mistaken.
Paolo's definitely suggesting that it was in a kind of, you can't jump, so we're going to jump kind of thing.
Yeah. All right, well, let's lose all of that then.
Well, why don't we just leave it in and make you look stupid?
No, that's a bad idea. Posts. A post. ZCHAB J5, something along those lines, says, your Football Weekly Very Extra is like Schrodinger's cat. The act of observation changing a vodcast. How would this weekly have been without the camera observing it? The very act of observing the test subjects alters their performance. Interesting line. He then goes on to suggest that it kind of makes you think that if football wasn't watched, would the outcomes be different?
Wow.
Deep.
How would we ever know?
Well, here's an example. Next weekend, you watch the football. I won't. We'll see if we come up with the same match.
So it'll be the opposite of what happens most weeks.
Is this a variation on the if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there, does it make a sound?
Philippe, you're the philosopher type.
No, it's all to do with the old simile of...
Philippe's waggling his fingers, which I think is important.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Rafa Benitez styling.
Yeah. Oh, what do you... Akin to Brennan Rodgers.
Now you're doing breasts. Yeah. What's this about?
No, it's the...
Call of Madonna with the fake boobies.
When you try to explain the theory of relativity...
All the comic references, Barry, I would not have expected that one.
When you try to explain the theory of relativity, which right. I can't do, what I do remember, it's all to do with this example of the train which is moving and looking at a bird that is flying outside the window. And the two viewpoints...
Is this a Cantona one or not?
No,
okay,
it could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
So, anyway, Schrodinger's cat. Can you explain that?
No.
All right.
My understanding is that... You can't see the cat.
Yes.
So it is both alive and dead in possibility.
Yeah, both possibilities coexist at the same time.
So if we recorded a podcast that nobody listened to, it would both be amazing and rubbish at the same time.
Right.
Is that right? Does that sound right?
I'm pretty sure it would be rubbish.
Now, hey, Football League. Have we got time to cram in Football League chat into part two? It'll be a long part two, listeners, but if you're ready, we are as well. Let's start at the tippy top. Championship, what's the picture? Hull blowing it.
Yeah, Hull blowing it in Cardiff-like fashion.
Yeah.
They went to Barnsley at the weekend and lost 2-0. Fantastic goal from Jacob Mellis, the former Chelsea youngster.
Yeah.
Which means they go into the final weekend of the season just 1 point ahead of Gianfranco Zola's Watford.
Right. And then the playoff picture is Brighton, Crystal Palace, Bolton and possibly Forest.
Possibly Forest, possibly Leicester. They're still in
really
chance. Yeah. Brighton definitely there after the weekend.
And going Downsville, it looks like being Wolves and either Barnsley or Posh.
Yeah, it's Wolves most likely.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, Peterborough and Barnsley.
Plus Bristol City already down.
Bristol City are already down.
Yeah.
Basically, Wolves need to win away at Inform Brighton, who are already in the playoffs, and hope that both Barnsley and Peterborough lose.
Right.
And if Barnsley and Peterborough both win, that brings all the other teams into play. But it basically looks like Wolves are going to go for a second relegation on the bounce.
I mean,
considering the players they've got there, I mean, it's not quite up there with the sort of QPR kind of level of underachievement, if you like. But it's a serious screw-up by those in charge at Molineux.
While Mick McCarthy, of course, former manager, is doing wonders at Ipswich.
Just to emphasise the fact, he's taken Ipswich well clear of the bottom three.
Championship sorted. League One. Now, obviously, it's all about the game at Griffin Park, John. John Ashton takes up the story.
So, to paint the scene, it's Brentford against Doncaster at Griffin Park. Brentford, the home side, need to win for promotion. Doncaster need anything other than a Brentford win for their own
promotion.
Do it
in real time, John.
It almost is in real time.
All right, good.
Because in the 94th minute...
It's the 94th minute.
There's a tangle in the Doncaster...
It's 0-0.
Doncaster area. Yes, it's 0-0, sorry. It's
Doncaster
0-0.
Are getting what they want. They just need a point.
Doncaster need a point, and they're getting it until the 94th minute when there's a tangle in the box.
No.
In the Doncaster box, so the referee points to a spot, the spot, and it's a penalty to Brentford, a penalty to win promotion to the Championship. And Marcelo Trotter...
But what's this? He's taken the ball off the designated penalty taker.
On loan from Fulham. He grabbed the ball first and refused to give it up to... Kevin O'Connor, the club captain and designated penalty taker, who literally couldn't get the ball out of his hands. Trotter stepped up, and slammed it off the underside of the bar.
Oh, no, but at least it's still 0-0, so...
Trotter, the plonker.
Right.
And, yes, it is still 0-0, but then a clearance is hoiked down the right touchline, where it's Billy Painter, who's... I don't quite know why he's there. Yeah. I think he might have been getting some instructions from the technical area.
He was just having a rest.
Well, why on earth he would be there? It just seems to be wrong, doesn't it? But he's on the...
But he's ready, isn't he? When that ball comes to him, is he ready?
And he's away, squares it. James Coppinger scores. I mean, the Doncaster fans behind the goal go absolutely crazy. They've secured promotion to the Championship.
So it went from Brentford putting the penalty away, winning promotion, to them being out and in the playoffs. And Doncaster, it wasn't that, mate. Everyone went on about this. It wasn't as good as the Sergio Aguero last year. That was better.
It was pretty. I mean, it was up there. With the 94th minute and the promotion decider, you get a penalty. I mean, the Doncaster goal is slightly... It's a bit of a red herring because that didn't actually change anything. It just sort of confirmed it and added to the moment a touch. But the penalty missed in those circumstances.
Now, Uwe Rosler must pick his bees back up off the floor for the playoffs. Will they be facing... Who are they going to be facing? Is it your Sheffield United?
No, they'll take on Swindon while it's Sheffield United Yeovil in the other, the other semi.
Big, big fixtures. And going down, Scunthorpe, Bury, Hartlepool and Pompey. And Hartlepool fans dressed as penguins dominating the London Underground today. Many people tweeting pictures of that on Saturday. Did you see that?
No, I missed that.
They're all dressed as penguins. Yeah, is that the nickname of Hartlepool?
No, the Hartlepool are the monkey hangers.
Of course. But you're not allowed to call them that, as I understand it.
Why not?
Because they take exception to that reference to a less than glorious episode from their past.
That's right. They voted a man dressed as a monkey as their... Mayor, didn't they?
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
All right, then. I'm clearly not up to
Hangus
speed.
The monkey, yeah.
Hangus
yeah.
the monkey. I thought you weren't supposed to reference that.
Well, it was a long time ago, and it was... Yeah. Wasn't it, the story is that some monkeys washed up on the beach from a ship, and they literally hung them as...
As Frenchmen.
Yeah.
As a French spy.
It's an easy Napoleon. Mistake to make. It's obviously not, Philippe. I'm only saying that to underline the extraordinarily small-minded attitude of the people who hung those monkeys, and are still celebrating it to this day. With the name of their football team, why were they going around as penguins, Barry?
Well, I think it's the thing they do. The last away match of each season, they have a fancy dress. Last year, they all went as Smurfs.
Ah, and that must have been very confusing.
Blued up and had the white hats and white trousers.
Can you imagine if you were a 6-year-old and you saw like 300 Smurfs emerging from London Underground? It would make your decade, wouldn't it? Really?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, they're pointy white hats off to them.
Yeah, good stuff. They'll be in League 2 next year. Gillingham, Rotherham and Port Vale won't be because they've just come up. And, the team's going down. Let's see. Barnet.
Edgar Davids Barnet. Gone down an Aldershot. AFC Wimbledon had a very lucky escape. So they get to preserve their league status, having it taken away from them by Franchise FC.
I met Edgar Davids last week, actually.
All right.
Yeah, he wouldn't take his hat off.
His hat?
No, he wouldn't take his hat off. We were in a studio, and he was casual with a hat. I think the director actually said, Edgar, could you take your hat off? And Edgar Davids looked at him and said, no. With such force that I assumed he was joking, just to, you know, mess with the guy. So I went, you won't take your hat off. And then stop laughing.
What kind of hat was it?
It was a baseball cap.
All right.
So the visor was playing havoc with the Paul Cameron's attempt to get to the Edgar Davids within. Of course, the big story in League 2 was Southend's clash at Roots Hall with Morecambe, where a genius move once again from manager Phil Brown, who thinks outside the box, managerially speaking. They're 1-0 down at half-time. What does he do for the half-time talk?
Gets Jeremy Kyle in.
Of course.
Presumably to harangue his players.
I have to say, Jeremy Kyle's like really big now. Doesn't he not have his own daytime show in the States as well?
He's pretty famous, yeah. He's like the new Jerry Springer, isn't he? But he's like the English Jerry Springer, which is kind of... I don't know if you ever saw the English version of Jerry Springer, in which Jerry Springer himself came to the UK and presented a few programmes.
No, I didn't.
But it was
that.
Just a bit sort of grubby and unfortunate. Whereas if you Americans, you're kind of funny in these situations. But somehow.
Is it just grubby and unfortunate when it's your own kind?
I think perhaps.
Whereas when it's Americans, we can afford ourselves a little
maybe,
chuckle.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, there, I don't
is
know.
There, is there a special name for the gaming between Southend and Morecambe's and the shrimp? These old shrimpers?
Oh, some, yeah, it should be, shouldn't it?
Shrimps.
The shrimp derby.
I don't know.
I met Jeremy Kyle.
You do. Matthew Lund likes him too. He says, not many people, he's a Southend player, he says, not many people can say they've had a team talk from Jeremy Kyle. Well, we did today. Ha ha, bit starstruck, he said, encapsulating very nicely for anyone who wasn't there what exactly it was like. Yeah, why do you like Jeremy Kyle, Barry?
No, I didn't say I like him, I said I met him.
Oh, I thought you said you liked him.
Well, he was actually surprisingly nice and affable and good company. I was in his company at Cheltenham Festival. He's a huge horse racing fan.
Right.
And he was a guest of a bookie in a box at Cheltenham, and I was alongside him for lunch, and I wasn't looking forward to it with much relish, I have to say, because, you know, Jeremy Kyle, I've seen his show, it's pretty grim, and he comes across as very hectoring and just a...
Producer Ben, effectively.
Bit of a twat. Yeah. No, way worse than Producer Ben. But he was really good company, and yeah, I felt a bit weird after it, because I actually liked him.
Oh, all right. Well, it's always interesting to meet people face-to-face who you might have had, you know, a particular feeling about based on the kind of work they do. I have to say, his halftime talk, successful?
No.
That's 1-0 at home to Mork.
All right.
Although, hopefully, we'll see now a spate of daytime TV stars giving various team talks about the country.
Brilliant. Philip Schofield?
Yep. Philip and Fern. Is it still Fern, or is it Holly?
No
Holly,
idea.
Holly Willoughby.
It's Holly.
Holly Willoughby.
Yeah, she'd be a popular choice at halftime, I imagine.
All right. Why, is she attractive?
Yes. Right. David Dickinson?
Oh, yeah, that's a great shout. He's kind of Phil Brown, but more so, isn't he?
Well, he's more mahogany permatanned than right. Phil Brown. And right. then he wears, like, funny glasses. That's his thing.
Then you've got various gardening types and people who do property shows.
Yeah. And Alan Titchmarsh. He does both.
Hmm?
Monty Dan.
Well, I don't know.
He's a bit
you have
too
to
cerebral.
Dig yourselves out of this situation. There's all sorts of ways that they could approach this. What about Tricia?
Yeah, down-to-earth
Yeah, down-to-earth. Yeah. Is Tricia...
Is she still going?
Is she? I don't know. She's an Norwich fan. So that would be an angle there.
Get Kilroy in.
I have to say, football clubs out there, we are available to do this kind of thing. If you'd like some kind of promotional Football Weekly halftime team talk.
Well, if you were watching Southend and they were 1-0 down against Morecambe at halftime and you were invited to give the team talk, what would you say?
Well,
hello. You may remember me from such television programmes as Gazzetta Football d'Italia. And,
I'm not saying I would say it.
And that weird quiz show with Carol Vorderman.
Yeah. No, I think...
And darts with Dave Gorman.
Yeah. I think what would...
what have you done?
Obviously, we'd come in a special vehicle, and I might...
Mystery Mobile.
Yeah, very much so. I might step out and hand out promotional flyers around the dressing room before then, say, Jono Wilson, or, hey, how about we throw a Rob Smythe at them, see how they like that. Somebody with a little bit of a tactical noose, actually, might be more appropriate.
That'd be for Hartlepool's monkey hangers.
Very good. Anyway, yeah, there you go. I'm not saying that it's an idea that sprung fully formed from my brain, but there's the embryo of of something that I think very potentially interesting.
What kind of van would we have?
Oh, a very nice
one. A-team black?
You'd be in one van. I might have my own vehicle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
We could have a Volkswagen sort of camper thing that we could sort of stay in while we travel around the various different football grounds.
It would make an exceptional season. I have just one thing. I don't think was Jeremy Kyle at Roots Hall actually just happened to be watching, or had Phil Brown, his mate, got him to come all the way to Southend just for this?
I don't know.
You'd think that he was there anyway. You wouldn't have thought that Phil Brown would say, come down. I don't know. I genuinely, it's a very bizarre thing to do, isn't it?
Like, did Phil Brown have like the bat signal that he sort of showed up, and then Jeremy Kyle saw it and went, oh God, I'm needed at Roots Hall. And
right.
Just arrived in his equivalent of the Kyle Mobile.
Yeah.
With his halftime talk at the
Reading. His team talk and his DNA tester and his lie detector equipment.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's it for part two, then.
I fear we may have lost quite a large part of our audience.
But I reckon we've gained an entirely new... anyway, off we go with a bit of interim stuff, and then we'll be back with more Premier League in part three. How about this? Producer Ben, he's been quiet today, Producer Ben, but he's just unleashed a doozy. Fun fact about Jerry Springer. Where was he born? Highgate Station. Highgate Underground Station, when it was being used as a bomb shelter during the Second World War.
Wow.
How about that? Now, in other, and
if,
frankly
if
less interesting
he goes full
news,
circle and gets buried in Highgate Cemetery.
Ooh.
When he dies. What? Like, that's it's perfect, isn't it? Symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Symmetry is symmetry.
Oh, Philippe. Well, let's stop the pod there. That's it. That's today's pod. We have to do this other bit, but strictly speaking, that should be the end of the pod. We'll do the other bit anyway, just because other people are going to say, but you didn't mention Arsenal Man United and the draw there, so we'll have a quick mention for that, because Arsenal's still in the top four, though. Ooh. They've really got to hope that Spurs and Chelsea draw. Is that right? Is that... Because Spurs are a point, 2 points behind them, but with a game in hand. Chelsea have a game in hand and are in front of them. So actually, they probably want Chelsea to win, don't they? Anyway, Arsenal against Man United, what do you think, John?
It was a funny one, wasn't it? Because it started off, United started off in a fairly shambolic fashion, really.
Did they actually start?
Well, yeah, it was it was very strange. It was almost like, you know, they'd been celebrating something all week and had turned up not entirely prepared. And then, as the game went on, they got better and better. And a draw was probably a fair result in the end. It had a funny... The only kind of interest felt a bit it sort of surrounded Van Persie. The sort of result didn't feel crucial somehow.
You almost forgot that there was a lot for Arsenal to play for actually in this game. But you might say they were lucky to take a point out of it, the way that the game then progressed. No. Well, were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
Well, were there a lot of boos for Van Persie? Did you boo him? Did you, Philippe?
In the press box.
All right.
I wouldn't do such a thing anyway.
Okay.
There were a few boos around.
Yeah.
It looked like there'd been a lot of boos for Manchester United's players.
Right. Okay. I'm moving on now to Stoke Norwich.
Okay.
Stoke scored a goal at home. Norwich, they're 6 points off the bottom three, but they have played one game more than the teams down there, Villa and Wigan, and they're kind of sleepwalking their way towards danger, aren't they? Olenino says, how long, talking about Borussia Dortmund, how long until English teams start creating their own football naught, you know, which is that machine they've got which fires footballs at you from any number of random angles and you have to try and hit them into a different designated...
Borussia Dortmund thing.
Yeah, yes, yeah, absolutely. He says, who will come up with the worst imitation? I can picture Grant Holt playing whack-a-mole with his head in Norwich's particular setup. It's a great shout. Norwich are okay, though, aren't they? And Stoke now are, definitely, aren't they?
Yeah, it was good. Another great win for Stoke. I think the highlight of the match for many people was a shocking miss by Mr. Peter Crouch, who will be waking up with the horrors. So he could be pretty grateful that his side won. Charlie Adams scored the winner.
Yeah,
it's bizarre, isn't it? Like, considering where Stoke were before they played QPR last weekend, and everybody's thinking, oh, they are on their way down. They could finish in the top half now.
To be fair, I think there was a certain amount of wishful thinking from a lot of people.
Yeah,
reading the potential results in a particular light. Man City, West Ham. Ooh, a thunderbolt from Yaya Toure. Bosh, that one stayed hit.
I didn't see this one.
Oh yeah, he really caught that one. Yeah, special. Andy Carroll with Joe Hart making a uncharacteristic mistake. Actually, the ball going between his legs for West Ham's goal.
Let in another soft one, and I think that's his fifth in the. For the club this season, and then he's had a couple of shockers for England as well. So his reputation, I think, has taken a fair old dent this season, but he's getting away with it. As pundits and commentators seem quite reluctant to I wouldn't say pick on him, because I don't want to pick on him, but he seems fairly
Teflon
on a number of levels.
Yeah.
And he won't play the FA Cup final. Pantaliman will play and goal for Manchester City.
Interesting.
And if the season had carried on, you could have imagined Roberto Mancini doing something a little bit drastic.
I'm bringing Pantaliman in instead of Joe Hart.
Yep.
Interesting. From the West Ham perspective, of course, we mentioned the fact that Newcastle are going to be away at Upton Park next weekend, which means that Andy Carroll could even end up relegating his hometown club or playing a big hand in putting them in all sorts of trouble, because he's on a real run of form. he said, preparing to move on to West Brom, looking great against Saints.
That's also the reason I've barred you to Upton Park.
Oh, that's true. Mm-mm. What a game that's going to be next weekend.
Yep.
What a game.
Yep.
Right. I suspect you're about to gloss over West Brom Saints, but that was quite an interesting game just because the referee, it was his first ever game in the Premier League, and he ended up sending off three players. So, you know, if you hadn't seen what had happened, you'd think, oh God, he's had a shocker, or he's a bit of a disciplinarian. But all three
he
red
is,
cards...
Yeah, he averages three red cards per game.
But all three were thoroughly deserved, and yeah, he did well.
He did well. Although I don't think he's 26 or 27 or whatever they said. Doesn't look it.
I don't know.
Well, he's meant to be really young.
Referee kind of ages you, though, doesn't
does it?
Think,
does yeah. it age you?
It's kind of an Iron Robin-ish sort of thing about him.
Yeah.
He looks about 20 years older.
Well, I think so.
Okay.
In other news, Chelsea, Swansea 2-0 to Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks pretty good for Rafa there, doesn't it? They're back up in third place, looking good. They've got the Europa League coming up. Oh, Milan, 1,158, though, saying, you know what, when you look at the stats, they've actually got a worse win percentage under Benitez than they did under Roberto Di Matteo.
In which period of Roberto Di Matteo's glorious reign?
He says Roberto Di Matteo this season played 12, won 7, had 24 points. Benitez played 22, won 12. That's 1.8 points per game. So slightly worse. Was it worth all the aggro that a point of Benitez caused? I don't know. We don't need to go back over that, but it's a fair point.
But yeah, but you have to say since the so-called Rafa's rant, which was not a rant, the results at home have been remarkably consistent. And
have they?
Very good indeed. Oh, yes,
that's
indeed.
Good. That's good. Well, they've got a big lot. Game. Yeah.
No, it fixture. Has to be stressed what Benitez is doing right. with a squad that is relatively thin, which has been hit by injuries as well, and having to play all these games and probably having a chance to become a European champion of some description.
Compared to Roberto Di Matteo, he does have a Demba Ba in you know.
That's not where he's been rotating players. I mean, up front, yes, a bit of Bayern Torres, of course, but it's especially in midfield.
Yeah.
And he's played again David Luiz in midfield, who is looking better and better. He's having a great influence on the Brazilian. And I think he's been absolutely terrific for them.
Plus, Demba Ba hasn't actually scored that many goals. If
no,
you look at the number of goals Chelsea scored in their sort of load of fixtures, I think 7, 8, 9 different players have.
Yeah, but he's still scored more than the fella who was playing up front in the Premier League, Fernando Torres, who is still yet to score this year. He hasn't scored since, I think, Christmas Eve or Boxing Day or something.
In the league?
In the league, yeah. Okay. So whatever Demba Ba's doing, it's still a bit of an improvement of the other fella. And of course, you mentioned home form. How about then this big home fixture they have in their attempt to conquer this Europa League title? They're at home to, of course, Basel on Thursday.
All right, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Second leg of the semi-final.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be there, Philippe?
I sincerely hope so, yes.
Yeah, because the buffet is great, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic. Right. And sometimes especially good on European nights.
Really?
Yeah, it is magnificent. And just to see the faces of those foreign reporters coming to Stamford Bridge for the first time and when they discover the buffet.
Right.
It's magnificent.
What's the worst buffet you've ever seen in the ground?
The worst I've ever been through was at Crystal Palace.
Oh.
I was going to say Crystal Palace.
So was I.
Right. Yeah.
And it's unfair to pick on Crystal Palace because they're kind of, you know, a bit skint. But the day I was there, they had soup.
It was not such a buffet as an attempt at poisoning people.
Right. So they may go down easily, but their food doesn't, ironically enough.
They used to do... I've got a feeling that it's a Premier League regulation that you have to serve hot food to journalists.
Oh.
And Palace, when they went up, the last time they went up, they used to just have sandwiches at halftime.
Right.
And when they went up, they therefore had to start providing hot food for journalists. And because they were so cash-strapped, they just had these, you know, soup. That was their hot food for journalists to fit in with the Premier League regulations.
I'm not sure that I've got enough on this Chelsea-Basel game in other news. So Chelsea, they're, what, 2-1 up from the first leg?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's difficult to see Basel turning it around.
But is it?
They are a good team on their day. But they seem quite
they didn't perform,
edgy
did they,
and nervous. I said on the vodcast, I didn't think they did themselves justice. And I just want to see a decent game of football. I'm not that bothered who gets through to the final. So hopefully they will do themselves justice on Thursday night.
They haven't won any of their away fixtures in Europe this season, drawing 4 and losing 2.
And if I'm not mistaken, this weekend they lost 3-0 at home to Lucerne.
Did they?
Yep. So it's possible that there was, I don't know if there was a lot of rotation, turnover and so forth, but that's...
A draw would have been more appropriate, you know, then you'd be tying up Luzon.
Yeah.
The other semi-final in the Europa League, Benfica are going to be taking on Fenerbahce. Fenerbahce 1-0 up from the first leg there, but and are they going to rue that penalty?
Perhaps, but there are already some people, I think, at UEFA who are thinking, Chelsea-Fenerbahce in Amsterdam as a final, ooh.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure that it is going to be Fenerbahce because Benfica, very strong. No away goal, of course, from the leg in Istanbul, but just that 1-0 deficit.
They're unbeaten at home this season. And I think Fenerbahce left it behind them. They had chances to win by a lot more than 1-0 and didn't take them.
Mm. All right. Well, we'll be looking at that Europa League action in another edition of our vodcast on Friday, which is going to feature Philippe.
Yes.
Fresh from Stamford Bridge. Perhaps you can bring us a cake or whatever it is they do that's so special. See what you can do, eh?
Say if I can do, yeah.
Uh-huh. Before that, on Thursday, Ian McIntosh will be joining us for Football Weekly Extra. Not sure who else is in. Barry, are you there?
I think so.
All right, then Barry's in. Super stuff. And that's it for today. Well done, listeners, for making it this far. We'll be back on Thursday. Bye for now.